just to shine in the dark. You gotta love like there's no such thing as a broken heart. You gotta love like there's no such thing as a broken heart. What am I gonna tell my kids when they see all of this bullshit that goes down on TV? When the whole world is down on its luck, I gotta make sure they keep their chin up.
Alrighty. I'd like to thank all of you for listening on the very first TruckerCast with Van C254, the podcast for truckers. So, I want to get into a bit of a small subject here on this whole ELD mandate that went into effect last month. Now, the one thing I've been seeing a lot of these old-time drivers have been portraying as for why they're protesting this. Now, this is just my personal opinion, and that would be that they just can't cheat the logs as effectively as they would have done with paper logs. And I believe that's what the real reason why that there are so many people protesting the ELD mandate. Mainly because it forces these drivers to drive legally and safely. And I think a lot of drivers have that old school man mindset where they think, as long as I'm not tired, I'm going to keep going. And as truck drivers, we have hours of service that we have to obey by. The 8, 11, 14, 70. And not a lot of drivers are happy with having to deal with a lot of the ELD mandates that went into effect. Now, excuse me. Myself, I've been using electronic logs all my career, and I don't mind this whole ELD mandate type of routine. But as the years go by, I would just definitely assume a lot of these old-time drivers will continue to say, no, we don't want these ELDs because it's the government squeezing in to our lives and our way of making money. Look, personally, I don't care what their reasons are, as long as they don't affect my way of living. They can do whatever they want. If these people want to go out onto roads near Washington, D.C., or on a stretch of road, bobtail, and cause a huge traffic jam to protest the ELD mandate, you know what? Fine, go ahead. That's not my problem, that's theirs. But for them to protest the way they've done, it shows that they're the old-fashioned cowboy-style trucker. No one's going to tell me what to do. Even though that this is the company truck, in all, other than the name, this is my truck, so I can do whatever I want. But look, once you've joined this industry, you know what you're getting yourself into. I did that very same thing when I joined this industry back in late 2011, early 2012, when I first joined the industry after getting my CDL. And I've used all sorts of types of computers that are in this truck. I've used the old-style Qualcomms that were either 3-line, 10-line, I believe, and the newest generation of Qualcomm that came out. Now, currently for the company I'm working for is not using Qualcomm, but using a very, very similar device called Zonar, Z-O-N-E-R, which has the electronic logs, messages, and what I really like, it has a pre-installed Rand McNally GPS navigation system, which I always say Rand McNally is by far the number one most highly sought after navigation system, maps, GPSs, it doesn't matter. They're one of the best. But other than that, well, back to what I was saying. A lot of things have changed in this industry. We had the whole the sleep apnea mandatory test for every single company that they must do it. That was signed last year by former President Obama. Now, recently, President Donald Trump repelled that mandate, and it's no longer a mandatory law that companies do the sleep apnea test. Now, when it comes to that, I would say Obama knew nothing of this industry, and he had the nerve to snake his way into this industry and do what he did. Which means, when he signed that, it's basically saying, you have to narrow the window to the trucking industry. So basically, if you're too fat, you can't get into the industry. A lot of these drivers, when they go into the truck driving school, they have no other way to get a job. And I always applaud anyone who joins our industry. But once they go in, they get their physical done by chiropractors, which I find it absolutely ridiculous that companies can be that cheap that they don't bring in actual doctors, actual PhD physicians. And to conduct the mandatory physical done for truck drivers. Instead, with like multiple companies like CR England, Werner Enterprise, Swift, let's see, what else? Prime Incorporated. A lot of these major industries in trucking are doing these sleep apnea tests by measuring the circumference of your neck and saying, oh, if it's above this number, you gotta get a sleep test. And that's where a lot of these hopeful truck drivers run into problems. A lot of them don't have health insurance, and a lot of them are low on money and spending a lot just to get a CDL. But once that sleep test hits them, they are pretty much out of luck. And there are some companies out here that contact this small company that supposedly do a sleep test. And according to the remandate of the... Well, the appeal of... Yes, I can't talk today. The removal of the law that was signed by Barack Obama that stated that sleep apnea tests must be done on every single candidate that walks in. And if they have too large of a neck, depending on if you're male or female, you have to get a sleep study. And that's no longer in possession of the law with it, as far as the Department of Transportation is concerned. But back to what I was going at, is that they bring in these little machines that I would say don't do nothing to give an accurate reading of a sleep study. Now, if when I get the chance myself, I'm going to an actual sleep study facility, get a real sleep study done, and show them that either I really do have sleep apnea, or that little machine was just nothing but garbage, and shows that I don't have it. If I'm on the border, but I lean towards more no, I don't have to use my my CPAP machine anymore, which I think would be great, since after all the years of me having this thing, well, not years, months, I'm still not used to it. And I'm probably guessing for a lot of drivers, it disrupts them from sleep who are on the border of not having it. It could disrupt them of sleep, and sometimes in my case, I just rip that thing off me in my sleep. I don't even realize that I'm doing it, and it could throw off whatever it's called in the machine's card reader. And yeah, like I said, that could cause problems. If I'm ripping that thing off my head in the middle of my sleep, that could lower the percentage of, well, let's just call it cooperation. But excuse me. And I know there's a lot of people that are not heavy set and still have sleep apnea and never get tested. And I have seen a lot of these candidates that want to get into the company that are skinny as a twig, never get their next measure. And you never know if they have sleep apnea. Here's how I see things have to be done. If this was me in my possession, I would have tweaked that law, saying that if you're going to do a sleep apnea test, which measures the neck and your body mass percentage, you would have to do it to everybody. But you have to make it an absolute focus on people who weigh up to 350 to 400 pounds or over. If they are severely morbidly obese, those are the ones you really have to focus on. And yet, I see a lot of these super skinny drivers never get tested, and they never have to go in for a sleep study. I just think that's just not fair. But thankfully, this whole sleep apnea thing by DOT is gone. And I'm just glad we have a president that knows how the trucking industry works. And is working on making things better in this industry. Now, he did stick with the ELDs. I got no problem with doing, but that's just how things roll in this industry. Now, with other things, considering, like, Now, I've gone over the ELDs, the sleep apnea study that was repelled in August, I believe, of last year. I can't really remember, but, well, I don't know if it was August of last year, but the other things I would like to go over, I can do other in different podcasts down the road. If anyone has any suggestions, I'm up for it. Hopefully I can actually get into other podcasts and bring in other drivers into this podcast, see what they have to say, what their thoughts are. And, oh, before I end this one, I do want to go over this of what one other driver told me. It doesn't matter what's on the side of the truck, it's the driver's attitude. My opinion is that is absolutely true. It doesn't matter what the driver's company he works for, it doesn't matter what's on the side of that thing, it matters who's inside that vehicle. And that's absolutely true. However, the company's reputation when it comes to treating its drivers can either help them immensely when it comes to gaining drivers, or it can damage them in the worst possible way. Now, there are two companies that I want to go over with about that. Well, make it three. In early 2000, in the late 2011, to, I would say, from what this driver told me, was mid to late 2015 or 16, was a period with Werner Enterprise where they were absolutely one of the worst companies to work for, way before CR England took that over. And myself was what Werner was the very first company I drove for. And I'm thankful that Werner Enterprise was the first company that took me in, but when it came to treating the driver and treating the equipment, it was by far one of the worst experiences I've ever had. For me personally, the minute I got there, I mean, it was a bit of a culture shock, and I left that company a little bit to really gather myself, since the very beginning of it, it was a culture shock, and it was a bit of a head brush. It came at me all at once, way too quick, so I left them, got with another trainer, who was the biggest douchebag I've ever met in my life. And that's a lot to say. During the whole time I was training, all he did was sleep, and drive for maybe 8 hours, and sleep. Me, I was the one that was always driving. And if I did something wrong, even the smallest thing, I would be called every single name under the radar. But I would say what really got me going when it came to his behavior was when he demanded me pay for the locksmith to unlock his truck that he leaves his keys inside. And what really got me confused is that when I was in CDL school, I was always told to have one or two sets of keys with you at all times and keep them in your pocket. This guy was all about have multiple sets and keep one in the ignition at all times. One that spell a little bit of a disaster if that got into the wrong hands. Because, I mean, if any crazed person or whoever wants to steal that truck, all he has to do is break the window, look, hey, keys in the ignition, start her up, off they go. Now, for me, I never do that. And thankfully, I never have to. Because as long as the key's in my pocket, there's no way that truck is going anywhere. And, well, sidetracked a little bit. Back to it. When he got himself and me locked out, because I didn't have my key in my pocket, and honestly, that's his truck and that's his responsibility to make sure it's not only locked and secured, but he has a way to get back in. And he demanded that I pay him back for the $120 for getting the truck, getting locked out. He was the one that locked the doors, yet he blamed me. And that went on and on and on, and he constantly tried to extort money off me, which tells me that he was not really in it to train drivers. He was only in it for the money. And I absolutely hate truckers that do that. They know they're taking on a new truck driver that's fresh out of CDL school, and yet they treat them like piggy banks or cash cows or whatever you want to call it. Which I'm glad a lot of companies are now increasing the amount of experience that a driver must have to become a instructor for their company to train new students. Now, after I was able to leave that guy's truck during the Christmas season, I was able to get off his truck, leave, spend Christmas with my family, and then go back and finish up with another trainer who was on a Walmart account. And I did forget to mention that this guy never allowed me to make deliveries, never allowed me to back, not once. Because, as he put it, that all new drivers are untrustworthy and reckless. But after I got back with him and back with Warner and got with the new trainer, who basically allowed me to back like crazy, since the account he was with was Walmart, and that allowed me to back up as much as possible, since it was practically mandatory. And after I was able to finish up my training hours and got my own truck after a test, I was basically put in one of the worst trucks I have ever used. It was constantly breaking down on me. The axles constantly overheated, and the dispatch were relentless when it came to making sure that truck was never red tagged. They kept me out of the more advanced terminals, which they scan the truck using whatever plug is on underneath where the driver is, and it'll mark off saying, hey, this needs to be fixed, that needs to be fixed, and blah, 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 blah. And my dispatch were relentless. They wanted to make absolute sure that I never did that. And I'm probably guessing if I had a breakdown on the road, they would blame me, which they blamed me for everything. When I had another truck strike me because he wasn't watching his trailer turn, he got me in the bumper and almost took it off, which was a nice gash in the bumper and nothing else, thankfully. One thing they did was blame me for it, for not being awake to watch it. And I just found that absolutely ridiculous. Why is it a driver's job to stay awake during other drivers when they are backing up or leaving? My job is to sleep around that time, but they just would not hear it. But fast forward, I would say about 6 months later, around October is when I officially left Warner Enterprise, because I just could not stand being treated like absolute garbage. And that's when I first joined for the first round of night transportation. And it was a good run while it lasted, until I had to make the decision for me to say that I was not mentally mature enough to be in the trucking industry, and I had a lot of growing up to do. And I would say that happened in 2012. A whole bunch of years later, I made the decision to rejoin the trucking industry after I lost my CDL, well, because I couldn't afford the renewal. In which I had to join the one company that had one of the worst reputations when it comes to accidents, and that would be big old Swift. Do I resent going back to the industry? No. Because I wouldn't be where I'm at right now. But do I resent joining Swift? Absolutely. I mean, the first time around was great for the first year I was with them. But the one thing that really got me heated was seeing my paychecks get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And that's just one thing you never do to a man, is mess with his paycheck. Me, I don't have that many bills to pay. The only thing I'm really going at is my car, my phone, insurance, that's it. which a lot of drivers say that you are one lucky SOB for not having so much, for not having a lot of bills to pay. Because a lot of drivers out there have mortgages, multiple car payments, school to pay off for their kids. So I would say a lot of these drivers, their paycheck is the lifeline for a many of people and their family. I don't have that weight on my shoulders, and I'm glad for it. But also, when I was with Swift, I had an apartment that I had to pay off. And around the same time I got the apartment is when I was asked to join a dedicated craft account, which got me home every weekend with basically a little bit more pay and more home time, which I love. But I would say within 3 days of constantly making on-time deliveries, I was kicked off for no reason. And they could never tell me why. They constantly danced around in circles and never told me why. And I lost out in a lot of money to pay off my apartment on time. And I struggled. And there's always a whole saying, if you're struggling in the trucking industry with money, you got problems. And it's not normally the driver's fault. It's normally the company that's screwing them. And that's what Swift did to me. And as I watch my checks get smaller and smaller and smaller, is when around the time that I just stopped caring. And that's just how I am personally. If you show me that you could care less about my well-being, why should I do the same thing? And it affected my performance. And Swift didn't like it. But also, I had to deal with a safety coordinator at the terminal I was at in Illinois, who would find the smallest things that I could have done different and practically spin it to where it was my fault. Like when I had my very first truck, which was a Freightliner Cascadia, which ran fine during the early time, but when it did break down on me on the side while I was on the interstate, it was 3 days after I got a oil change in Salt Lake City, Utah, that one of these boneheaded mechanics didn't put something on back on tight enough. Something fell off. All the oil drained out, and basically something in the engine was basically metal on metal grinding. Something broke and my cab filled with white smoke. And of course that freaked me the hell out. Pulled over to the side immediately and called the fire department because I didn't know if that thing would burst into flames. So yeah, I called 911. I said, hey, my truck is smoking right now. I don't know if this thing is going to go up in flames or it's going to go boom. And I'm very glad that the fire department did show up within minutes, blocked everything, and checked everything out if everything was okay. And they praised me for doing the right thing, pulling over to the side, getting it out of the way, and calling them immediately. But what got me is that my safety coordinator blamed it on me and made it my fault, saying, why didn't you do, did you do your pre-trip? Yes, I did. But she kept going on saying, oh, well, if you would have done your proper pre-trip, that would have never happened. And the spot where they showed me what came loose was completely underneath the truck, where I would have never seen it unless I crawled under the truck and looked for myself. Now, part of the DOT's PTI does not say that you have to go underneath the truck during your pre-trip inspection. And yet she came at me like saying, I have to go underneath the truck. And when I got my next truck, which was another Freightliner, and it ran pretty good, but the thing was that it could not hold air conditioning, and that was in the middle of summer. And I constantly pushed them to get my AC fixed, but they would not budge. And I guarantee you, if that any way stations said, when I told them that my AC's broken, and the company I worked for, Swift, who refused to fix it, saying that it's not a safety hazard. But here's what I'll say right now. Having AC and heat does help you when it comes to getting proper sleep. If it's too cold, you're going to wake up. If it's too hot, you might wake up. But if that truck heats up enough and you have no AC and the only thing you have is an itty-bitty fan, you run the risk of dying of heat stroke. And I went over this with several family members, and my mother said I told her about the whole thing with them refusing to fix the AC, and she works for an insurance firm, and tells me that since they knew that the AC was broken, and they were sending me to some of the most hottest locations, like Phoenix, Arizona, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Houston, Texas, the southern area of California, all these dry, heated areas with no AC but a fan while I'm sleeping, was definitely me being at risk of dying of heat stroke. And she straight up told me if I would have died from heat stroke, that would have been neglect on their end, and she would have sued the living out of them for neglect for killing her son. But after so many times pushing them to, hey, fix the AC, and I had to threaten to call Phoenix numerous times, and I actually had to do it for them to get the AC fixed. And I was glad that it finally did get fixed, but not for long. Because within 2 months, that AC was down again, and I was once again sweating bullets in that truck in some of the hottest locations in America during the summertime. And it was very similar to winter. Which I'm glad that my dispatch encouraged me to idle the truck during some of the coldest times that I was in. Well, the coldest areas during winter, I was in South and North Dakota. They had me in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. All these very frigid areas. And it was during a time where there was some kind of very severe cold front that hit some areas in America, that a lot of drivers had to idle the truck to keep it warm. I'm glad that my dispatch encouraged it, but my safety coordinator constantly said to keep the truck off. It needs, and we need to keep idling time at an all-time low. And I would say, what are the drivers supposed to do? Use the bunk heater? And she said yes. Now, mind you, the bunk heater doesn't work that well sometimes, and it's never guaranteed. And that's what I constantly threw at her, and she said, well, then buy thicker blankets. Which was pretty clear to me that she doesn't really care about safety. It was more about bossing people around. And after so many times of dealing with their crap, like I said, I stopped caring. And eventually, I got canned. But I was very thankful that Knight Transportation contacted me on the day that I was terminated. And I was able to join them. Now, when I was with Swift, I retrained under the reefer division. I'm sorry. And that's where I'm still am now. I'm on reefer. The refrigeration in trucking terms. Anyway. Very glad that I was able to rejoin the industry as quickly as I did when I made the transition from Swift Transportation to Knight. I consider myself very lucky. Very, 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 very lucky. So, and that's basically all I got for today's podcast. Now, tomorrow, I want to go over, like, if you're joining the trucking industry for the first time, I'm going to go over some of the pros and cons of each company, what division that you feel comfortable joining, whether it be dry van, which is a vast majority of what the trucking industry is, but there's also the refrigeration units, there's the flatbed units, there's the tanker units. I mean, you look into it, there's a lot of open stuff out there for anyone to join. You just gotta go with the company and a branch that suits your needs. And I'll be going over that on my next podcast. Now, if you want to keep in terms of what I've got to put out there, be sure to follow me on Twitter at VenomSting234. At VenomSting, number 2, number 3, and number 4. Also, be sure to give me a look on YouTube, which is basically the same thing, VenomSting234. Which I try to upload as much as I can, but it's been a little bit busy for me. Other than that, that's all I've got for you guys. Be sure to stick around. Keep an eye out for my next podcast, and I'll see you guys again real soon.